Welcome to the Black Mass. Tonight, two stories about animals. First, here's a gentleman to tell you about a famous patent medicine known as Oil of Dog by Ambrose Bierce. My name is Buffa Beans. I was born of honest parents in one of the humbler walks of life, my father being a manufacturer of dog oil, and my mother having a small studio in the shadow of the village church, where she disposed of unwelcomed babies. In my boyhood, I was trained to the habits of industry. I not only assisted my father in procuring dogs for his vets, but was frequently employed by my mother to carry away the debris of her work in the studio. In performance of this duty, I sometimes had need of all my natural intelligence, for all the law offices in the vicinity were opposed to my mother's business. They were not elected on an opposition ticket, and the matter had never been made a political issue. It just happened so. My father's business of making dog oil was naturally less unpopular, though the owners of missing dogs sometimes regarded him with suspicion, which was reflected to some extent upon me. My father had as silent partners all the physicians of the town, who seldom wrote a prescription which did not contain what they were pleased to designate as oil of canine. It is really the most valuable medicine ever discovered. But most persons are unwilling to make personal sacrifices for the afflicted. And it was evident that many of the fattest dogs in town had been forbidden to play with me, a fact which pained my young sensibilities, and at one time came near to driving me to be a pirate. Looking back upon those days, I cannot but regret, at times, that by indirectly bringing my beloved parents to their death, I was the author of misfortunes profoundly affecting my future. One evening, while passing my father's oil factory with the body of a foundling from my mother's studio, I saw a constable who seemed to be closely watching my movements. Young as I was, I had learned that a constable's acts, of whatever apparent character, are prompted by the most reprehensible motives. And I avoided him by dodging into the oilery by a side door which happened to stand ajar. I locked it at once and was alone with my dead. My father had retired for the night. The only light in the place came from the furnace, which glowed a deep, rich crimson under one of the vats, casting ruddy reflections on the wall. Within the cauldron, the oil still rolled in indolent ebullition, occasionally pushing to the surface a piece of dog. Seating myself to wait for the constable to go away, I held the naked body of the foundling in my lap and tenderly stroked its short, silken hair. Ah, how beautiful it was. Even at that early age, I was passionately fond of children. And as I looked upon this cherub, I could almost find it in my heart to wish that the small red wound upon his breast, the work of my dear mother, had not been mortal. It had been my custom to throw the babies into the river, which nature had thoughtfully provided for the purpose. But that night, I did not dare to leave the oilery for fear of the constable. After all, I said to myself, it cannot greatly matter if I put it into this cauldron. My father will never know the bones from that of a puppy. And the few deaths which may result from administering another kind of oil for the incomparable oil of canine are not important in a population which increases so rapidly. In short, I took the first step in crime and brought myself untold sorrow by casting the baby into the cauldron. The next day, somewhat to my surprise, my father rubbed his hands with satisfaction as he reported to my dear mother.
Amazing. Simply amazing.
What is it, dear? You're absolutely radiant. Do tell us what has happened.
Astounding. They said they never saw anything like it.
Never saw anything like what, my dear Mr. Bean?
The oil. This morning's vats produced the finest quality oil that was ever seen. They all said so. The physicians to whom I showed the samples pronounced it the finest ever.
Well, dear, what did you do to prove it so? Don't tell us, for heaven's sake.
But that's just it. I have no knowledge whatsoever as to how the result was obtained. The dogs were treated in all respects as usual. They were, in fact, of a very ordinary breed. Was that not so, Buffer? Buffer!
I deemed it my duty to explain, which I did, though palsied would have been my tongue if I could have foreseen the consequence.
Mr. Beans, how very disconcerting that for so long we should have been ignorant of combining our industries.
True, true, Mrs. Beans. And we must take immediate measure to repair our error.
Certainly so, Mr. Beans, certainly so. First thing, we shall remove my studio to a wing of the factory building.
Oh, this very evening. This very evening we shall begin.
Oh, Buffer dear, what greater joy might a beloved son bring to his beloved parents than an enterprising mind?
And my duties in connection with the business ceased. I was no longer required to dispose of the bodies of the small superfluous, and there was no need of alluring dogs to their doom. My father discarded them altogether, though they still had an honorable place in the name of the oil. So, suddenly thrown into idleness, I might naturally have been expected to become vicious and dissolute. But I did not. I did not. The holy influence of my dear mother was ever about me to protect me from the temptations which beset you. And my father was a deacon in the church. Ah, alas! That through my fault, these estimable persons should have come to so bad an end. Finding a double profit in her business, my mother now devoted herself to it with a new assiduity. She removed not only superfluous and unwelcome babies to order, but went out into the highways and byways, gathering in children of a larger growth, and even such adults as she could entice. My father, too, enamored of the superior quality of oil produced, purveyed for his vats with diligence and zeal. The conversion of their neighbors into dog oil became, in short, the one passion of their lives. An absorbing and overwhelming greed took possession of their souls and served them in place of a hope in heaven. So enterprising had they now become that a public meeting was held.
And we are resolved, Mr. and Mrs. Bing, that our censoring must needs be severe if your invasions upon the population continue. We assure you that further raids will be met in a spirit of hostility by one and all.
My poor parents left the meeting broken-hearted, and, I believe, not altogether sane. Anyhow, I deemed it prudent not to enter the oilery with them that night, but slept outside in a stable. About midnight, some mysterious impulse caused me to sneak through an open window into the furnace room, where I knew my father slept now. The fires were burning as brightly as if the following day's harvest was expected to be abundant. One of the large cauldrons was slowly walloping with a mysterious appearance of self-restraint, as if it bided its time to put forth its full energy. And my father was not in bed. He had risen in his night clothes and was preparing a noose in a strong cord. From the looks which he cast at the door of my mother's bedroom, I knew too well the purpose he had in mind. Speechless and motionless with terror, I could do nothing in prevention or warning. And suddenly, the door of my mother's apartment was opened, noiselessly, and the two confronted each other, both apparently surprised. The lady also was in her night clothes, and she held in her right hand the tool of her trade, a long, narrow-bladed dagger. For one instant, they looked into each other's blazing eyes, and then sprang together in indescribable fury. Round and round the room they struggled, the man cursing, the woman shrieking, both fighting like demons. She to strike him with a dagger, he to strangle her with his bare hands. I know not how long I had the unhappiness to observe this disagreeable instance of domestic insanity. But at last, after a more than usual vigorous struggle, the combatants suddenly moved apart. My father's breast and my mother's weapon showed evidences of contact. For another instant, they glared at each other in the most unamiable way. Then, my poor wounded father, feeling the hand of death upon him, leaped forward, unmindful of resistance, grasped my dear mother in his arms, dragged us to the side of the boiling cauldron, collected all his failing energy, and sprang in with her. In a moment, both had disappeared, and were adding their oil to that of the committee of citizens who had called the day before with an invitation to the public meeting. Convinced that these unhappy events closed to me every avenue of an honorable career in that town, I removed to the famous city of Ottumwee, where these memoirs are written with a heart full of remorse for a heedless act entailing so dismal a commercial disaster.
Oil of Dog by Ambrose Bierce. And now, a story by Saki about two lady horsemen and a hyena.
They say that all hunting stories are the same, but my hunting story isn't a bit like any you've ever heard. It happened quite a while ago. All the usual crowd were at the meet, especially Constance Broder. Constance is one of those snapping, florid girls that go well with autumn scenery or Christmas decorations in church.
I have a presentiment that something dreadful is going to happen. Am I looking pale?
Oh, you're looking nicer than usual. But that's so easy for you, dear. Constance and I were well mounted, and we had no difficulty in keeping ourselves in the first flight, though it was a fairly stiff run. Towards the finish, however, we must have held rather too independent a line, for we lost the hounds and found ourselves plodding aimlessly along miles from anywhere. It was fairly exasperating, and my temper was beginning to let itself go by inches when suddenly...
There they go at last! What in heaven's name are they hunting?
Well, apparently it's not a fox.
No mortal fox. It's twice as high. And what an ugly small head. And its neck. Enormous and thick.
It's a hyena. That's what it is. It must have escaped from Lord Tarrant's farm.
A hyena?
Yes, and it's probably tame. Look, the dogs don't know what to do about it.
Oh, dear. They're running off.
The hyena hailed our approach with unmistakable relief and demonstrations of friendliness.
What are we to do? It's getting dark.
What a person you are for questions, my dear.
But we can't stay here all night with a hyena.
I shouldn't think of staying here all night, even without a hyena. We had better make for that ridge of trees to the right. I imagine the highway is just beyond.
I hope it is. What on earth are we to do with the hyena?
What does one generally do with hyenas?
Well, I've never had anything to do with one before.
Well, neither have I. If we knew its sex, we might give it a name. Perhaps we might call it Esme. That would do in either case.
Esme?
Here, Esme. Come along. Come along. There must be a gypsy encampment nearby.
Gypsies? Why do you say that?
We just passed a baby, a half-naked gypsy brat.
What are they doing there?
Picking blackberries, obviously. There. Esme is probably frightened. Esme? Esme? Come along here. Esme? What have you got there? Esme? Esme? Put down that baby. Esme!
Merciful heaven, Baroness. What on earth shall we do? What are we to do?
Constance, I am perfectly certain that at the last judgment you will ask more questions than the examining spirits. Esme, down. Down, Esme.
Can't we do something?
Esme, if you don't put that baby down, I'll crush you with the whip.
She's running off with the baby into the bushes.
Esme! Esme!
Horrible!
Well, Constance, I really don't know what more I can do. We'd best get along. Esme can catch up. Come along.
Do you think the poor little thing suffered much?
Well, the indications were all that way, my dear. Ah, we are saved. There's the highway.
Where?
Up ahead. Didn't you hear the car? There. There's another. Ah, here comes Esme. There, Esme. Naughty. You're a naughty hyena.
Can you make it? Ravening these cops by your side. Oh, dear. What is it heading to his mouth?
I can't quite tell, dear. Now, pay attention. There's the road ahead. Don't run ahead, Esme. The cars won't be able to see you at this hour. Esme, hold. Stay with us. Oh, the silly animal.
I don't think we should worry about that beast.
No, I dare say he can fend for himself. Oh, Esme, what did I tell you? What did I tell you?
Ladies, is this... was this your dog? I'm dreadfully sorry.
You have killed my Everett.
I'm so awfully sorry. I keep dogs myself, so I know what you must feel about it. I'll do anything I can in reparation, anything
please,
at all.
Please bury him at once. That yes. much I think I may ask
certainly,
of you.
Certainly, at once, madam. William, bring the spade. No, the spade, William. I saw. What a magnificent fellow. I'm afraid he must have been rather a valuable animal.
Well, he took second in the puppy class at Birmingham last year. Oh, don't cry, dear. It was all over in a moment, I'm sure. He couldn't have suffered much.
Oh, look here. You simply must let me do something in reparation.
I couldn't think of it.
Oh, but I insist.
No, I couldn't think of it. But as he persisted, I let him have my address. Lord Pebble never advertised the loss of his hyena. When a strictly fruit-eating animal strayed from his park a year or two previously, he was called upon to give compensation in 11 cases of sheep worrying and practically to restock his neighbor's poultry guards. And an escaped hyena would have mounted up to something on the scale of a governmental grant. The gypsies were equally unobtrusive over their missing offspring. I don't suppose in large encampments they really know to a child or two how many they've got. There was a sequel to the adventure, though. I got through the post a charming little diamond brooch with the name Esme set in a sprig of rosemary. Incidentally, too, I lost the friendship of Constance Brodel. You see, when I sold the brooch, I quite properly refused to give her any share of the proceeds. I pointed out that the Esme part of the affair was my own invention, and the hyena part of it belonged to Lord Pabham, if it really was his hyena, of which, of course, I've no proof.
That was Esme by Sophie. The part of the two ladies was played by Pat Franklin. The motorist was Bernard Mays. The hyena was played by himself. In Oil of Dog, the first of our two stories this evening, the family was variously performed by your host of the Black Mass, Eric Bowersfeld. The technical production was by John Whiting. And now, good night.